Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamong.
Welcome back to another edition of Single High, Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you from the smoldering ashes two days later of Notre Dame's disheartening home opener loss at the hands of the mighty Thundering Herd from Marshall. I am Frank Vitovich, one of your hosts, joined as always by Greg Flamong, the president of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club and video analyst at Irish Sports Daily. It's been more than 48 hours, Greg. How are we doing?
I'm good.
You're good?
I think...
Like in life, not as like a fan, right?
Right. Like, well, I mean, yeah. Even as a fan, like obviously it's...
Ooh.
It's like sobering, you know, like it's sobering. But I think,
yeah,
I think what Marcus Freeman said is true in terms of like the team got a reality check. And yep. I think that we as fans need to have a reality check as well.
Well, yeah.
And I brought it up on Hit and Hustle, too, because like, you know, Notre Dame tried to go 0-2 at the start of last year. And it's been brought up on Twitter and stuff. I kind of made the point, and some, you know, people are like, yeah, but they figured out a way to win last year. And it's like, that's true. That it is true, right? And obviously, and that they won the games kind of lends itself to building off of poor performances instead of falling apart because of poor performances with losses.
Yeah.
But it's an indication that we misread, you know, the signs. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say really, but like they started slow last year. They tried to lose to Florida State. They really tried to lose to Toledo.
They should have lost that game.
They should have lost to Toledo. They should have lost to Virginia Tech, frankly.
Yes.
So Notre Dame really tried to lose games early. And they didn't, and that's to their credit. But I think that we pretend that, you know, we talk a lot about the, you know, Brian Kelly's, you know, wins versus unranked teams and that sort of thing. And that's really good, but all those wins weren't super dominant. Right. And well, so no. It's just like, I think it is time for reality check. And I think the luck and fortune kind of ran out. And and to me, like it's not the worst thing in the world from a program building standpoint. Okay.
Not yet.
No. Right. They can always turn this into a positive, right? Anything that negative happens, right? You know, any negative circumstance in your life, you can always turn it into something positive. And I think Notre Dame can, right? They're not going to be a playoff team, right? They're not going to be a New York Six team, okay? Nope. But this team, this program does need to figure out how we're going to operate under a new coach. right?
Yes.
How are we going to win games under Marcus Freeman? The way they won games under Brian Kelly is that, but that's over with, you know? And everyone talks about, you know, I think people are kind of dunking on Notre Dame. Sorry, I didn't mean for this to be like a monologue, but
no, I like it. I like where this is going.
I think that people they dunk on Notre Dame as if Notre Dame chose Marcus Freeman over Brian Kelly, and that's not how it went. You know, it's like, oh, wish you had Brian Kelly now. It's like, well, yeah, we didn't ask him to leave. That's not how it went. He left, and Notre Dame had to make the best of it. Right, with the information they had at the time, and they did, and so now they have to make the best of it, right? And so, so for me, it's like, look, Marcus Freeman, he lost two games that were winnable. Obviously, the Ohio State game is of a different caliber than Marshall, absolutely, right? But you know, oh, like Marcus Freeman, he gets up there. And he says, you know, I don't know if it's my inexperience or if it's this and that and the other thing. He's clearly like trying to search for answers. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, my guy, man, like Brian Kelly's been a coach for decades. He tried to lose to Toledo last year with all of his experience and his 12 years in the program. He tried to lose a game just like this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Daquan Finn goes down at the one. They lose to Toledo straight up.
Yeah.
So fortune was on their side in that sense last year, and fortune was not on Notre Dame's side this year. Okay, but Notre Dame does need to figure out, how are we going to win under Marcus Freeman? What kind of program are we going to be under Marcus Freeman? And they need to figure it out together. They need to figure it out right now. They do not have time like last year because they eked out those wins. They don't have till week 7 to figure it out.
No,
they need to do it now, but it can be done. Lesser teams have done it. Lesser programs have done it. Notre Dame needs to do it. So that's it.
That's it. We're just going to end the pod right there. That was good. We said it all in the first 5 minutes. You know what? I think it was sobering. You know what else was sobering this weekend, Greg?
What's that?
It was the first football weekend. I could not enjoy any sort of adult beverage throughout the game, which I don't know if it made it better or worse. It probably made watching it worse, but it definitely probably made my Twitter feed more readable for everybody else for the fact that I was not able to. But I'm going to change that right now because I am allowed to now. I had a little bit of oral or dental surgery, I guess you'd call it, Saturday morning. And they put a new root into my mouth. It looks like there's a giant screw in my mouth right now. It's not fun. I will say that. Anybody who a dentist says, hey, you need to get that tooth pulled and get an implant put in, you just try to find any other thing to do because it's a year-long process. That just sucks. Not painful either. It's just annoying. It's just like, I've had to go to the dentist like 6 freaking times for this stupid tooth. And I'm like,
yeah,
doc, I thought I was getting the tooth today. He's like, whoa, no. No, 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 no. We just put the root in today. You're gonna get a tooth in 4 months. And that was the least painful thing that I experienced on Saturday after that game. But I've rectified the situation now. I have a delicious double IPA from Treehouse Brewery, which I have been tweeting about ever since I got these beers. It's called the Greenest Green. I thought it was very fitting, very on brand for the pod. Let's see how this is. Oh my God, that brewer, they don't miss, Greg. They don't miss. If they were Notre Dame's quarterback, we'd be 2-0 because they just don't miss. Their beers are so damn good. Anyway, okay, let's start diving into some of this. You said a lot of interesting things. Talking about just kind of the game in general, where we're at. I mean, the thing that stood out to me, and it is so similar to last year, and trust me, I've said the same things on Twitter. I've gotten the same responses from people around, like, the difference between the Toledo game and this Marshall game is so small. And everyone's like, no, it's a win versus loss. I'm like, yeah, I am aware there's a big difference between a win and a loss. But the game itself is just, it was so similar in so many ways. I mean, even to the point that Notre Dame finally takes the lead in the fourth quarter and you're like, okay, finally, you know, this is it, you know, Notre Dame. And then Notre Dame has the ball, a chance to extend its lead, and you're like, well, you didn't do it. That was not good. You should have done it, because now you're giving them the ball, and it's like, boop, 95-yard drive again, and you're like, ah, this is it. And then, you know, obviously the difference here is Toledo did that last year, and then Notre Dame immediately came back, or, you know, Cone threw the touchdown with the dislocated finger, you know, to Mayer. Everybody was happy, you know, blah, 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 blah. But the difference this year was, instead of the touchdown drive, we got a pick six, because you have a sophomore quarterback making a second career start versus a fifth-year senior who, you know, has been in those situations before. That's the big difference. Like, that's kind of like, you, I've thought about this, and you distill it down, and that is the big difference. What it came down to, everything else was just so similar, where you're like, how are we not running the ball on this team? And I watched part of your Hit and Hustle today with Jamie, so I learned, I heard you guys talking about, you know, just how often Notre Dame was running into numbers against Marshall, which was not smart. But it was the same thing of last year, where you're like watching this Toledo game and you're like, Notre Dame's bigger, stronger, faster. How are you not able to get a fourth and one?
Right.
I've read something, I think it was Jamie actually that wrote it, about how on that fourth and one, you had offensive linemen standing there watching Audric Estime struggling to try to get, you know, the extra inches he needed for that first down, just watching him instead of pushing him over the pile. And that's, I think, to me, one of the kind of the most discerning things that we've seen so far in these first, you know, two games, is just that lack of effort. And I don't know if, you know, maybe the reality check, you know, that Freeman was talking about was again, more on the, you know, the effort and preparation side, and some of the players maybe felt they didn't have to prepare as much for Marshall. I mean, obviously, hopefully they realize they do now, but I mean, a lot of these players have been in the program a long time, and some of the players that you're not seeing, without calling names, because we're not going to call out names specifically, but you watch some of Notre Dame's players who you expected to be pretty good this year, and you're like, man, effort is just not what it's been in other years. And that, to me, for all the talk, you know, all summer about being an offensive line and a defensive line driven program, and all the talk about starting fast and changing practice schedules, and starting practice with competitive situations to instill that fast start mentality, it has not set in, like, even a little bit, which is concerning. Because, you know, for all of the lack of execution, like, lack of execution is one thing. Like, I think, you know, most reasonable fans can live with that in some, you know, to an extent, right? You can live with your sophomore quarterback just missing Braden Lindsey on a go route, or whatever type of route it was, but a deep bomb at the end of the first, half by like inches, right? Like, Buckner just missed Lindsey on that. And you're like, okay, he's, you know, there's no like, well, I mean, you have to make that pass, but like at the same time, it's like, not like he was like 10 yards, you know, out of the, you know, overthrew him by 10 yards. It was like just off. And you're like, okay, sophomore quarterback, second start, working with these receivers, still getting timing down. Like, that kind of lack of execution, I think you can live with it to a certain extent. But it's the, you know, watching defensive linemen just like, you know, half-ass their rush, and you're like, what? This isn't not execution. That's effort. And that I think it should theoretically be one of the easier things to clean up. But I mean, that was one of the biggest takeaways for me from this game.
Yeah, I mean, so the Buckner pass, to me, that, like, I don't actually give a pass for missing that. You can't miss it,
right? There's a difference between giving like a pass, though, and saying, like, I don't know if understandable is the right word.
I don't even understand it.
All right, that's fair.
Because here's the thing, okay? Like, the pick sixes, okay? Yeah. those fall into the category of, hey, man, you got to be smarter than that. But yeah, it's like, he hasn't played a lot of football, right? And honestly, like, decision making, that's where he's going to, that's where he's going to make mistakes. The decision making piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it's like growing pains, you know, just like the pick six he threw against Virginia Tech, growing pain. Now, granted, now here's the problem. The pick six he threw against Georgia Tech or Virginia Tech, it's the same problem he threw pick sixes against Marshall. He's throwing it to the wrong side. He's throwing it to the wrong guy. He's looking at the wrong spot. That's
forcing it in,
It's the same thing he did last year. So that's a concern, right? You understand as a freshman. That honestly, like, that's why you play as a freshman. That's why, and frankly, this conversation is kind of moot because he's out for the season, unfortunately, for him. And that's a bummer, right? It's terrible. And he could not get hurt this year. He needed this full season to get those reps as the starting quarterback. And it's awful for him personally. Like, it really is. Like, it could not, this could not, like, this is not, there could not be a worse outcome for him as far as an injury.
No, it's like,
sort of thing. He needed to play.
The absolute worst. Like, you couldn't have scripted a worse outcome to this season. I mean, you could. I mean, the only thing that would have been worse would have been like an ACL in camp or something like that.
I'm just thinking for him personally.
Yeah, but I mean for him personally, like, because then he would have missed all games. I mean, like,
right,
him getting hurt this early in the season was the worst possible outcome.
So, let's move it to Drew Pine. Okay.
Yes. Because I got some.
Well, so Drew Pine, like, if he has a play, like, because he hasn't played a ton of football himself, right?
Yeah.
In fact, Tyler Buchner has played more football than him, frankly. True. Okay, so, but if he misses a throw like that, it's unacceptable. You're a Notre Dame quarterback. If you can't hit a wide-open receiver streaking on a post route, if you can't hit that play, then what are we hoping for? You got to hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You have to. All right. So that's, to me, that's what it is, right? You can't miss those. Okay.
Yeah.
He had another slot fade, to Jaden Thomas that he missed, didn't give him a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just same thing against Ohio State. Now, the Ohio State one was a little bit different. He had to get it out a little bit early.
You got to hit.
Yeah, he got hit and that sort of thing. That was under duress, but the other one was not, okay? Yeah. You got to hit those. Like, the throws that are there to make, you got to make them, okay? So that's like, I'm not going to – like, Drew Pine is a junior now, okay? Yeah. This is his third year in the program. These are throws that got to get made, right? There's a decision-making aspect to it that, frankly, like, with Drew Pine, I'm going to be even more – I'm going to be even more less understanding. Because he's been in the program
even more or less now. Understand. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it's like he's been in the program for 3 years. Like, I just like the throw to the linebacker. You can't do it.
No, that was bad.
You can't do it. Okay. And I don't want to see it. Right. Tommy Reese has had him his entire career. He needs to be better at this stuff. So the decision-making aspect needs to improve. Where did you even go? I can't believe I'm actually like this fired up for this pod. I did not think I would be.
But you've been talking about this way more than me. I thought I was going to be the one fired up because I was getting fired up today on the old Twitter machine.
So it's all just kind of mid. You mentioned something else that I've now forgotten that unfortunately I'm not going to.
What all started where point. I said you could live with some of the lack of execution. My point was when you just miss like that. I get you have to hit those passes, but I can't remember. You probably remember all of this better than I do. Did we have a timeout left when Buchner missed that shot to Lindsey? I think we did, right?
We definitely did. Oh yeah.
Right. Okay. Because
I think we had two at least.
Because there was like 13 or 14 seconds left. So I mean, your margin for error there is pretty low. You have to hit it. Like, I could see him being like, I have to get this out far enough. I can't underthrow it because if I underthrow it, he's going to get tackled and, you know, it's not going to, you know, we're still going to have to, you know, have a Hail Mary or whatever. Right. And it's like that pass to me was like, it is off his fingertips. It's so close that I can live with that level of just missing a pass versus like, to me, the pick sixes were less, not the pick sixes. Cause he had two picks, but only one return. That to me is, I can live with less. because in that juncture, that was the game, right? The pick six was the game, and that was the same mistake. That was, you know, that was beyond just a lack of execution. The other part that I mentioned, though, was just seeing a lack of effort at times being discerning or, you know, discouraging, I think is probably the better word, at times where you're just like, you watch, like, Notre Dame's line, defensive line, coming into the season, we thought was going to be a strength, and it hasn't been. I read a lot, again, from Jamie at ISD about just the lack of havoc and the, you know, seeing the numbers and how low they are compared to other years is also a huge cause of concern. But it's like you watch the line and it just doesn't look like they're firing off like they used to. And sometimes, like, if you just like watching individual plays, you're like, that does not look like the best of effort. Like, if you just run right into the guy blocking you and just like kind of stop, is not good. Like, that's not a good look. And that's what we're seeing a lot on the defensive line, which is, it is just surprising that the strengths that we thought this team was going to have are not there. And it's like the weaknesses that we knew they were going to have, they're there. And they might even be bigger weaknesses than we thought, but they're not getting masked by what we thought were going to be the strengths at this point. And you're like, well, yeah, like, okay. If the defensive line was playing to the level that they had last year, I don't think Marshall scores as many points as they did or as they would have. And Notre Dame maybe ekes out a really, really unimpressive win. And again, maybe the narrative would change a little bit. But that the line hasn't been. And same with the offensive line, where it's like, okay, if the offensive line was playing a little bit better, again, maybe the outcome is slightly different, but that doesn't make up for the bad play calling that's happening right now.
True. I mean, that's true. You know, I didn't really notice the defensive line stuff as much as you.
Yeah.
But you know, if you say it's there, then it's there, right?
I would, again, if I was as good with the video stuff as you guys, I would go through and highlight a few of those, maybe just to send you, again, not to call anybody out specifically, but that's been concerning. But you know, you mentioned Drew Pine, and I got some thoughts on this in general, because I was getting a little annoyed today on Twitter, Greg.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I was getting very annoyed. I was getting annoyed that it seems like there's a large contingent of the Notre Dame fan base, at least the most vocal on Twitter and message boards right now, who are already writing off Drew Pine and are like, oh, I don't want to see him. Let's bring in Jelly, right? Bring in the true freshman who, you know, has played even the least football of all of them. And the thing that gets me annoyed about it is if we had never seen Drew Pine throw a football in a live game and had any sort of body of work to go off of, I guess I could see, you know, some fans being like, well, go with the taller kid with the bigger arm. But we've seen Drew Pine in games. We saw him come off the bench when Cone got hurt against Wisconsin and throw a touchdown pass to, you know, to Kevin Austin. It was a hard throw, but I mean, he threw it in between like three defenders, because I watched the play like 14 times today. It was a good throw. It was anticipation. He waited till Austin got into a space between three defenders, hit him, and Austin walks into the end zone for a touchdown. Then he led Notre Dame on a field goal drive there to extend the lead even more. And then Graham Mertz went all Graham Mertz and, you know, threw the two pick sixes, and the score looks lopsided. But when Pine came in, that game, and when he threw that touchdown pass to Austin, it was a 3-point game. It was a close game. And he helped and extend the lead. So it's like, okay, that's one. That's a good thing. I think he was like 6 of 8 that day and had a pretty good passing game, right? Then you go to the Cincinnati game, and it's like Notre Dame's offense was anemic in that first half, other than the first drive when, you know, they marched down and then Cone throws the awful interception in the red zone and killed any chance of scoring. But it's like then Pine comes in, leads him to points. You know, he's a Kevin Austin drop away from maybe that game being a win. Because he had, you know, Notre Dame had the momentum. They were down 10 at the time, I think. He throws the, you know, the long pass to Austin, who's standing alone by himself, like in the middle of the field near midfield, and just like turns too quick and drops the ball. Otherwise, again, who knows how that game ends up turning out? Because he got Notre Dame within three. You know, again, coming off the bench, cold and playing pretty well. I mean, he didn't play perfect, no, but those are two instances where he's come off the bench, not with getting starters reps in, you know, in practice, and he's played pretty well. And it's like, you've every these fans were like, ah, you can't start him, don't want to see him, put in a jelly. And it's like, give the kid a freaking chance before you're ready to just throw him, you know, to the wayside and say, well, you know, play for the future or whatever, and put in, you know, put in the true freshman. Like, no, give the kid a chance. It's I don't know, like, it's, I shouldn't be surprised, you know, that much, just because Notre Dame Twitter has been just worse than it normally is over the last 48 hours since losing to Marshall. But, you know, it's like, you have these fans who are acting like Pine is some former walk-on charity case that Notre Dame took a flyer on. It's like, no, he's not. He had a freaking offer from Alabama. He played in the Under Armour All-American Bowl. He was a top 100 recruit on Rivals at one point. And I know his ranking fell before signing day. But it's like, he's not like, it's not like we got some transfer quarterback from, you know, the Little Sisters of the Poor or whatever, and that's Drew Pine coming out, and it's like a make-a-wish situation that we're letting him start this weekend. He's a good quarterback, right? Yeah, he didn't beat out Buckner, for the starting gig. But, you know, Buckner was a top 100 quarterback coming out of high school and had a unique skill set that we were all hoping Notre Dame would be able to tap into, and maybe they would have been able to, for the rest of the year. But I saw, you know, other people like, well, they couldn't win the quarterback job last year. Like, come on. Do you really think that, like, Notre Dame was giving the job to anybody other than Jack Cohn last year when they brought him in as a fifth-year transfer? No, that was not a real quarterback competition. That was a Brian Kelly, you know, fake quarterback competition where everyone knew it was going to be Jack Cohn. It's not like he lost that quarterback in a quarterback competition. So he's fired up. Like, give the kid a chance. Let's see what he can do. The little bit that I've seen of him in games has not been terrible, right? People are acting like we're bringing in Pat Dillingham or Eric Chappelle off of the bench to start a game. And if you don't know who those names are, then you definitely cannot, you know, give Drew Pine crap before he even takes a snap as a starter. I think I'm done.
Okay. So I think where it's coming from is, first of all, he didn't look good in the spring game.
Right.
So that's part of it. The other part of it is he didn't look good when he came in.
Right. Which are not, I will say this about the spring game. We've seen quarterbacks look terrible in spring games and play pretty good the following year.
No, we have. But
Deshaun Kizer.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem with that, though. Okay.
Yeah.
Deshaun Kizer looked bad in the spring game, right?
Yep.
But then he came in and won the Virginia game.
That's fair.
So, like, okay, let's imagine a world where, I mean, it's kind of a different world because I don't think there was I guess it was Wimbush in 15. Yeah, it would have been Brandon Wimbush. All right, so let's say, okay, let's say Deshaun Kizer looks terrible in the spring game, right?
Yeah.
Comes in, doesn't look good against Virginia, throws a pick, they lose the game. Okay, then we find out Malik Zaire's ankle's broken, he's done for the year. Are people clamoring for Brandon Wimbush at that point?
Probably. But that's why it's different.
Okay. And Deshaun Kizer would have had no track record, right? He didn't come in against Wisconsin. He didn't come in against Cincinnati.
That's the
right?
difference.
Like that is, it is a difference. But the point is that the people don't want Drew Pine because he didn't come in and play well. That's the thing. So, but here's the other problem that people have is that They want the upside. People are still clinging on to the hope that this is not a 6-6 team. Okay? I'm telling you right now, the chances are they are going to be closer to 6-6 than, like, we're winning out. That's not happening. Okay? This team, because here's the thing. We're two games in. Avery Davis is not coming back. Okay? Tyler Buchner is not coming back. Jadarian Price is not coming back, but we're two games in. This is not the last injury that's going to be suffered from this team, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it works, okay? So people need to understand that they need to do whatever they can to win games ASAP, okay? You can't – just Marcus Freeman said it today. You can't ask him to go from the scout team to starting quarterback. It's not fair. Okay. That's not putting him or the team in the best situation. Drew Pine has been in the program for 3 years. Okay. He is in that time. He has never prepared as a starter, which he will now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He needs to come in and be able to play good football. Now he should not come in and try to be Tyler Buchner. They should not try to make him Tyler Buchner. Okay, you need to cater the offense to his abilities. We know they can do it because they did it to Jack Cohn last year.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, that was a better offensive team. Okay, they had more weapons. They had Kyron Williams. They had everyone they have now, minus Kevin Austin. Okay, Avery Davis. So that was a better offensive team.
Mm.
Okay, full stop. It's a problem. Okay, they are in a bad way. So, but they do need to go. They do need to go with Drew Pine, and it doesn't matter. Like everyone talking, like I was reading the thread because you responded to me, and then a bunch of people responded to you. So I saw all the replies. It doesn't matter. Like, okay, you want to see Drew Pine, or you don't want to see Drew Pine. Fine. You think he stinks? Then think he stinks. We all thought Jack Cohn stunk last year. Myself included. He needs to come out. He shouldn't play another snap.
We talked about it.
After the Cincinnati game, shouldn't play another snap. You know, and they put him in. They put him in against Virginia Tech, and it was like uproar. Is he seriously going to start against Virginia Tech? Gets benched against Virginia Tech. His career is going to be over. Then Tyler Buchner rolls his ankle. And Jack Cohn comes in and saves the day, and off he goes. And all of a sudden, he looks like a completely different player, right? We think we know, we don't. We think we know, we don't. We thought this offensive line was going to be great. They are not.
They are not.
The defensive line was going to be great. They are not. We don't know.
They are not.
We don't know. So, look, they're going to give him a chance. He's going to be the starting quarterback. They need to get him ready to go. They need to do it. Tommy Rees, it's a tough job, okay? It's a tough job. You're in a bad spot, okay? Some of it your own doing, because you couldn't, you didn't understand what your strengths were for the second year in a row. By the way, to start the year, you didn't know what your strengths were.
Yeah, it's not good.
You didn't know what you could do, but you got to do it. And I know it's difficult, and I know you're in a tough spot, but that's what the money's for, okay? You got a lot of money.
You did. Notre Dame.
You got a raise. You got all that stuff. Well deserved, in my opinion. But now it's time.
Well deserved. That's an interesting take these days.
No. No one, at the time, no one said anything about it. Everyone thought it was right.
True.
So there's no way that we're not second guessing now. He deserved it when he got it. But now it's time to earn that money, you know? It's difficult, but you gotta do it because you're paid to do it.
Greg, you know who else took over the starting quarterback job at Notre Dame? Their third year, somewhat unexpectedly.
Quarterback job in their third year, somewhat unexpectedly.
Not because of injury, but it was relatively unexpected. It raised some eyebrows. It was surprising when it happened.
Ian Book?
Yes. You know how many career attempts Ian Book had before the 2018 season?
What's that?
37 career attempts. That's all he had on his resume. You know how many
Pine has thrown coming into this weekend?
37.
30. It's close. Okay. Lowe's. My point being, you can give him a chance. Like it, and I think that was why I was getting annoyed on Twitter today. And is because it's like he has again. Okay, you could say he did not look great against Marshall, but you pull him off the bench after he hasn't been getting starters reps, and you say, "Hey, we're down two scores. Get in there." It's like, okay, not a great situation. And even going back to the spring game, like the spring game to me is irrelevant in what Drew Pine looked like. I think everybody saw the writing on the wall that Tyler Buchner was going to be the starting quarterback. It's just everybody knew that. Like, and I'm sure Pine knew that going into the spring game and was probably like, you know what? I'm going to take chances. Because my only chance of having a shot here is to go out and to do something crazy. So he probably threw, you know, like, because otherwise, like if Pine went out in the blue and gold game and just had a very efficient, like ho-hum day, no one's going like, oh yeah, he should start. So how he looked that day, no impact on, you know, how I think he's going to do this weekend. But I think you just, you got to give him a chance. He's shown it in games, and he's shown it. It's not like he did it against, Marshall or Toledo last year. He did it against Wisconsin and Cincinnati, right? Wisconsin might not have been a great team last year, but their defense was solid. He did it against Cincinnati, went to the playoffs. So he's got to, I don't want to say that because I'm no longer, reasonably confident about anything after the last, not even the last 2 weeks. It's just the last week. Because I think coming out of Ohio State, we all were like, that's actually wasn't bad. Like, it could have been worse. We thought, there was a chance it could have been a lot worse. So it's not like the last 2 weeks have shaken, too much of what I thought about this team. It's just the last week. Because the things that happen against Ohio State are a little bit more understandable when you're going against a team full of, top 100 players and five-star players all over their roster versus Marshall, which is, very few top 100 players and mainly transfers. So we'll see what he's got in him this weekend. Part of me thinks that the offense might move better with Pine just because I think he'll get the ball out a little bit quicker. And I mean, obviously a lot of the quarterback run game goes away, but if he just gets the ball out quicker and gets it to the right spot, again, going back to, again, guys, listen to Greg and Jamie's Hit and Hustle from today, because there's a lot of good stuff in it. But anyway, they highlighted a couple plays where it's just like there's easy matchups that haven't been exploited. If he just does that, we'll see. If we see Angeli this year, then it's really off the rails, though, I think. Because that means then Pine was bad, which then that means that's what I mean by it. Then it's really off the rails.
So here's the thing, right?
Let's hear it.
We could talk about how Pine can succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We can talk about how they need to, like you said, short passing game, RPOs, get the ball out quick, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The problem is that's how Buchner could have succeeded. And they don't do any of that stuff.
True.
So, in my opinion, the what and the how and all that stuff, like it could have worked with Buchner, and it can work with Pine. And I don't know that they're going to do that. Okay? They eventually figured it out last year.
Trip.
But, for the second year in a row, I'm watching Notre Dame play a team who has no business beating them. And we are running into loaded boxes. And I said it on the thing. I said it on Hit and Hustle today. And we broke it down and everything like that. Every time it was second and long, in the first quarter. Every single time in the first quarter, the Marshall blitzed the corners. They blitzed someone from the secondary, from the outside, every single time. And Notre Dame ran into it every single time. Every single time. The second and 15 that I tweeted about during the game, Notre Dame had a second and 15. Marshall had 8 in the box. Notre Dame makes a check. They do a check with me. And Buckner looks in the blank, change the play. They run it into 8 on second and 15.
Not good.
I don't understand. I truly don't. I don't get that. That doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that? That like football is such a numbers game now in terms of how many in the box and how many not, and you're running into that stuff. And lo and behold, they didn't get they got 3 yards, and so it's 3rd and 12. And the next play, you're incomplete. You're off the field, and you're punting. Okay,
yep.
That's not like, so this is what I'm talking about. Like, we're not, this isn't you know, it's not about what Pine can do or what he can't do. Like, what are we running for him? If we're doing the same stuff that we were doing with Buckner, then it's not going to work, and they're going to be bad still. They're going to continue to be bad, okay? Because that's not playing to anyone's strengths, right? You know, it's just how many times did they not? So Buckner throws 3 picks, no, 2 picks,
mm-hmm.
both on squatting corners,
yeah,
on a little quick hitch route, right? Both squatting corners on a quick hitch route. Here we are.
First, how about a double move?
How about a double move? No team in recent memory was begging for a double move, for a pump and go. No team was begging for a pump and go more than Marshall was.
I may have tweeted that during the game, but not
in the fourth quarter, when it was 15-12, right, and in the drive when Patterson false started on 3rd and 3, okay, on that first down play before it got the third down, on the first down play, okay, they're showing pressure. They do a check with me. They check out of it, right? Corner squatting, and I'm thinking, it's pump and go. They got it. They don't do it.
No.
They throw it to the boundary again. The corner jumps. It's going to be a pick six, batted down at the line of scrimmage. We almost threw 3 interceptions by the same quarterback on the same concept. And it's like that happened in the first quarter, and then it happened in the fourth quarter. How is that happening? What are we not talking about these things? Mm-hmm. Do you not see that? Like, do you not see, like, first of all, from the coaching point of view, do you not see that and tell him, like, hey, pump it?
Yeah.
He will bite. We will walk into the end zone. We will walk in. We don't have to run. We'll walk in. Don't do it. And not only that, he throws it again. He still throws it on a squatting corner that is jumping anything short. It's
not good.
It's unbelievable. It is nuts. So I don't know about, you know, what Pine can do with what they have him do. Let's see what they have him do.
I found the tweet. I did tweet it. 3:31 p.m. Saturday. So that was first half still. A lot of time left. Buckner can make up for that INT by hitting that same CB on a double move. That was in the first half. Before they did it for the rest of the game. Anyway. It wasn't a good game. Wasn't a good game. And I don't know. I do know that it's not ideal where Notre Dame is at right now. I don't want to say as a program, not ideal where we're at in the season for possible repercussions, both, you know, on the field and on the recruiting trail, which actually leads us to some questions that we got, Greg. We got a lot of questions, and we've already talked for about 40 minutes. I think we should jump into questions for the sake of my own sleep this evening, because it is late here on the East Coast. So let's jump into some of these.
Robert Halacki asks us, thanks for the question, Robert. I know he's a listener. First question, and I think we got from Robert in a little while. 10-part question. Just kidding. So this is now our thing. This is the multiple part questions is part of the single high brand. I'm feeling like I have more confidence than many of that this team pulls it together. I expected bumps along the way. Not this, but if we don't, my brain goes to the future. What are the consequences of future Notre Dame teams / recruiting classes of 23 and 24, which I think is an obvious concern for everybody. I know Rico Flores, Braylon James, Drake Bowen, the mayor of this recruiting class obviously was another one who all tweeted out like, hey, 110% committed. I think James even, was it Geno Flores looked like he tweeted out like almost like it looked like a screenshot of like a group text saying, what was it? Something like wait till the three. I don't think he called them three amigos, but the three headed monster, three headed monster. I think he called it obviously referring to him, James and Greathouse. Get there. So obviously you have a bunch of the recruits who were, vocal in saying like, hey, I'm still committed, obviously, but that's after 0-2, right? If this does really, really go off the rails, right? And we have a 2007 or 2016 style season, then I'm concerned about both 23, more so 23 than 24, because 24, the way that recruiting classes are accelerated these days, you're not going to have time to make up for, the class of 24 either. How are you feeling about possible recruiting repercussions of this start? And just in general, now the direction that year one of Freeman is going.
I think since Buckner is hurt, it's kind of like, okay, we kind of get it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this could go in a kind of a way, yeah. Like I think they kind of understand. Personally, like I think you're worried about Peyton Bowen, obviously, but like
yeah, but we were worried about that before the season.
You're worried about Peyton Bowen anyway.
Yeah,
honestly, like he's, I don't think Notre Dame. Honestly, in my opinion, I don't think Notre Dame. Like he's committed on paper. He's not a committed player. I don't know if I said it on this pod or if I said it just like in chats or whatever, but like to me, he is a silent decommit. He has decommitted in that he's openly going to Oklahoma a lot of the time. He's openly going to Texas A&M. He's coming to Notre Dame, right? So it's like Keon Keeley, right? He publicly decommitted out of the class. Like not Notre Dame isn't talking to him anymore, right? Yep. Peyton Bowen is silently decommitted, but is publicly committed, which means Notre Dame is still an option. He could end up at Notre Dame still, right? Mm-hmm. I would say it's probably less likely than like him ending up at either Oklahoma or Texas A&M. Which is like, what if it was more likely, why would you even be doing this stuff? You're going to Oklahoma all the time. You're going to Texas A&M. Like you said, you were going to shut it down in the summer and then you didn't. Right now you're going to visits and stuff.
I mean, he's never going alone though. He's always going with his brother. There's always that angle. So
hey, come on, man. Like, come on. This is, you don't have to take your brother.
Okay. Let's take Bowen out of the equation. Because like I said,
his brother is not the only brother that they're not the only set of brothers that has ever been recruited at the same time. Okay. He doesn't have to go on every trip with his brother. Obviously he wants to go. Obviously he's open to another school. Right.
So take Bowen out of the equation. Cause like
take Bowen out. I don't have a specific concern about anybody.
Is there a point at which you do get concerned? Like I said, 3-9. 2007 type season, 3-9.
You would probably lose a few, but it wouldn't be maybe I want to say a few. You would lose someone else.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be a max exodus, in my opinion. I think honestly, I think this class will be okay. You could see the 24 class that could go the wrong way.
You know what might help recruiting? Just gonna say it. Yeah, CJ Carr reclassification. I think that could be a little shot in the arm as momentum wanes.
Yeah.
So we'll see. What do you think the final recruiting class ranking is going to be? Range.
Well, I mean, it seems like they could still land. It seems like it could still land a Jeremiah Love. In fact, that might be likely.
And Lions.
Right. You land those two guys. And I mean, I don't know. They're probably like, so we're into that kind of territory of like, I don't really care because like, honestly, this would be the best skill position group on offense that they've had in a very long time.
Yeah.
Defense as well. Obviously losing Peyton Bowen would be a problem for that, but the two corners are really good. I mean, you land Lyons and Great House and Flores and and I'm missing one, Braylon James.
Yeah,
you land those guys with Jeremiah Love and Dylan Edwards. That's a phenomenal group. I mean, that is really good. So,
so what do you think? You think it's still top 10? You think they end in with a top 10 class?
Oh yeah, it would definitely be. If anything, it would be like. Like 6 or 7 is probably the floor.
Dude, we are on the same page. So the reason I ask, this is not a question that we got, from Twitter, but I do now have a bet with a friend of mine, who I've been texting with all day, who's on the ledge. So Dan, if you're listening, Greg is right where I am with where we end up on the recruiting rankings. He thinks we land outside the top 10. I specifically said I think we end 6 or 7. We now have a bet. One of us is going to have to take the other out for a night of drinks at some point when we're in the same town, which doesn't happen very often. However, that's the bet. He thinks we land outside the top 10. I said 6 or 7, and he generously gave me 8. So we'll see. He's taking the over, though, on the 8. So I guess technically – you know, we could finish 9 or 10 and he would take it. But that's the bet that we came up with, today. So I like how we both are on the same page. That makes me feel oddly confident. So I'm going to take it. Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next question because we took 7 minutes on the first one. Chris Jenkins, this is a 3-parter. You know, Chris has now joined the Oscar, train of, multi-part questions. WTF is going on with the team? Is it coaching, players, all of the above? I mean, I think we covered all of this a little bit already. I think it is a combination of all of the above. I think you got not the best of efforts in some cases. And I think you also have, from a coaching perspective, man, you mentioned it a couple times and I didn't jump in. I probably should have. It is concerning that 2 years in a row now we've had a mass miscalculation of what this offense could be. And if anything, I think, the hope that Notre Dame fans should have right now is that Tommy Reese has shown he could figure stuff out on the fly. I mean, granted, he had Brian Kelly there to help him last year, who was an offensive, minded head coach. He doesn't have that this year, so we'll see if he can do it again. But I mean, last year, remember those first couple games, they wanted to bomb it out. They wanted to air it out. And, you know, Cone got sacked a ton. I looked this up because somebody on Twitter again, Twitter has had me all kinds of annoyed the last few days. Somebody on Twitter was like, this is the worst offensive line, you know, possibly in the history of the program. And I was like, did you not remember last year? You know how many sacks Notre Dame gave up in the first 5 games last year, Greg? First 5 games.
Wasn't it like 24?
22.
Oh, okay.
But it's still a lot. Like, it's an insane amount of sacks. Like, Notre Dame's had seasons where they don't give that up. And it's like people are like, this is the worst offensive line in history. It's like, no, last year's offensive line through 5 games was statistically worse. But it's bad that 2 years in a row, like you said, Reese has just kind of miscalculated as to what this team could be. Will they figure it out before the bye? I don't know. I hope so. I just, at this point, I think we have now reached, well, here, Chris's second part question is going to lead right into this. Will the ship be righted against Cal? I think it depends on your definition of the ship being righted. I think it's impossible to think that they're going to fix everything in 1 week, right? And magically be a different team against Cal. I still think we're going to win this weekend because I am optimistically delusional, as we learned. Which is actually, it is wild to me that on the Notre Dame Twitter sphere, as the Philadelphia sports guy, I'm like the optimistic one right now, which is, it's just shocking to me. I'm telling friends like, hey, you're being unrealistic, which is not the normal case for a Philadelphia fan. But what do you like? What do you think of, you know, will the ship be righted this weekend against Cal?
Will the ship be righted this weekend against Cal?
Yeah. Like I said, I think it depends on your definition of what the ship being righted is.
I mean, will they win the game?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. I don't want to think about a loss, so I'm going to say yes.
So I have a theory about this.
I don't like where this is going, Greg.
No, it's good.
Okay.
I do think they will win because here's the thing.
Right. Thank God.
Here's the thing, right? There is no way. Notre Dame didn't prepare against Marshall with winning or losing in mind. Right? There's no way any of them thought they would not win this game. It was like a foregone. We just got to do what we do, right?
Yeah.
Do what we do. You know, run our stuff. Do the things. I mean, this is what, frankly, this is what got them in trouble against Ball State. This is what got them in trouble against Toledo last year, right?
There's Vandy, 2018.
Vandy, 2018. This is stuff we just, Vandy was a little bit different, but the point is that I think it's they're not preparing to win or lose. They're preparing to try to be a very good football team in their minds, right? That's how the game plan is put out, right?
Yep.
It's like what if you were honestly, if Notre Dame was super serious about winning the game, and it was like a game that they were really focused on, Marcus Freeman doesn't go out there on Thursday and be like, "We're going to air it out." When would you ever tell the game plan? Like everything they did was a cloak of secrecy against Ohio State, right? And then you go into Marshall, and it's like, we're going to air it out.
Yeah,
it's like because you don't have any fear that it matters. It doesn't matter, right? And Marshall, when they prepare, it's like we have to do X, Y, Z to win this game. These are the things we have to do, and if we do these things, we can win the game. Right. And that's all they're thinking about. We have to do this, 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 and this, and this to win this game. Find a way to win this game. All they're thinking about is find a way to win. And Notre Dame isn't thinking about winning and losing at all because they don't think it's going to be close.
Yeah.
Right. And so now Notre Dame's dreams are over. They have every goal that they talked about in the preseason, they're gone. You're not going to be a New Year's Six team. You're not going to be a playoff team. Okay. It's gone. It's over. Your quarterback's hurt. It's over. Now, for them, it's just about, okay, reality check. Okay, we need to find a way to win this game. And then we need to find a way to win the next game. Right? And Marcus Freeman is distilling it even smaller than that. We need to win this play. And then we need to win that play. And then we need to win that play and that play and that play. Like, so for them, I think they, this game is going to be ugly. I think this game is going to be like 17-13. They need to find a way to win it. And I do think they will find a way to win it. Okay, because I want to believe that. Okay, but if they lost 24-13, would I be surprised? Absolutely not, and neither would you. No one would be.
No, we're not. Okay. We cannot lose this game.
I want to believe they will, but we don't know that. We need to see it. We need to see what it's going to look like because we don't know what winning looks like for this team. We don't.
It's true. We can't lose this game though. Mainly because one of my coworkers went to Cal. I've worked with him for, I don't even know at this point, We worked together at the same company I'm at now for like the last almost 5 years, and we had previously worked together. So I've worked with him in various capacities for like 7 years, 6-7 years. Can't lose. He was already texting me during the freaking Marshall game, like, "Mup, I didn't think we had a chance against you guys, but now I do." I was like, I couldn't respond. I was like, I can't. No work friendly words are coming to my mind right now. So all I sent him was a thumbs up. That was it. I was like, thumbs up, dude. Yeah. So we can't lose. All right. Anyway, third part of the question from Chris. So if Pine isn't getting the job done, do they keep going? Or do they keep going with him, hoping he gets better, or bring in Angeli? So basically, I guess, you know, make it. How long of a leash do you think Pine has? Like this weekend and just in general.
It can't be too long.
Yeah.
They need to win the game.
Yeah.
You know, if he comes out and throws a couple picks to start, then I mean, what are they going to keep sending him out there?
So you think Angeli could play this weekend? Not in. Wow, I almost said not in mop up duty, but my God, that's
100%. He could.
That's the most optimistic thing I've said.
100%. They could play this weekend. You can't let someone blow a game at this point.
Well, yet you also know, like, do you remember another freshman from New Jersey, that quarterback who played for Notre Dame?
Matt LaVecchio.
You know where he went to high school?
No.
He went to Bergen Catholic.
Okay.
You know where Steve Angeli went to high school?
Bergen Catholic.
Yeah. I'm just saying it would be 20. What was that? It was 2000, right? It was. And what game? I should have looked this up. It was the third game, Stanford. Wasn't it?
It was Stanford.
It was the third or fourth game, right?
Battle
had like two starts, and Godsey had to start against
Battle started two. So it was the fourth game because Godsey started Purdue, and then LaVecchio came in against Stanford.
All right,
so it was the fourth game.
So that would be maybe history repeats itself. I hope it doesn't, just because I think that means that Pine wasn't it. So Chris also says, win or lose, I'm still Irish till I die. Appreciate that, Chris. And we both are as well. Got a question here from our buddy Ryan.
I have one more point.
Yes. So, what's your point?
Is that speaking of 2000, Notre Dame beat Drew Brees with Gary Godsey. Okay.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yep.
Figure it out.
That season also started with a loss, a closer than expected loss to, at that point, the number one team in the country, Nebraska. And then it ended in shambles in the Fiesta Bowl when Notre Dame got blown out. But it started similarly. It just didn't include a loss to Marshall, which is not great. Not great. All right, Ryan Ritter, our buddy Ryan from previously of Her Loyal Sons, the now retired Notre Dame blogger. So Ryan asks us, do you wish you were retired from podcasting like me? And the answer for you, Greg, I'm assuming is no, because you're recording like four things a week or more than that at this point. So we won't even make you answer that.
Well, no, because if I don't, then no one pays me. And so.
Well, there you go. So I jokingly said to Ryan on Twitter after the game, where he was like, "I'm glad I'm retired." I was like, "I am envious," or I'm thinking about it right now. No, I don't wish I was retired from podcasting because this is still fun, even though it is almost midnight. But it is still fun sitting here talking football and nonsense with Greg. On Skype is how we record, but it's fun sitting here chatting and getting the questions from you guys. It is disheartening to write, though, after these games. I will say that. I didn't do a lot of writing after this one because I was like, I just can't. I'll tell you what, after a loss like Marshall, doing this feels like work. And it's like, I do run the site because it's fun. And I love Notre Dame football and whatnot. So it's like, after a loss, it's like, ugh. I feel obligated to do this, and it feels like work. Whereas when it's after a win, it's like, oh, this is just like, this is fun. This is a hobby, you know? And like you said, it's like, it's a way to monetize, something you really like. So no, I do not yet if we go down the path of 3-9, I don't even want to say it, but good God, I don't know. Then, yeah, I tell you what, Ryan, if we go 3-9 this year, I might join you in retirement by the end of the year. We'll see. All right, we got Drew Brennan at Drew Brennan 77, offensive line. If you could boil it down to the simplest form, why can't 4- and 5-star recruits just block the guy ahead of them? Are we overrating our talent? Is the line blocking scheme too hard? Why does this unit continue to fail and not be a strength? Okay, so that's a multi-part question. I mean, we covered some of this. Like, there's the problem with the line right now is that, yes, there's breakdowns and they're missing assignments. But like you said, a lot of the inability to run is not necessarily the line sucking. It's numbers, right? You and Jamie covered it today. Like, how many times did we run into to 8 in the box? Guess what? That's more for the defense, right? So, like, it's part. I mean, actually, I don't know if you included. I'm going to read through this. It says, are we overrating talent, blocking scheme? Okay, so no, it doesn't talk about it. Some of it is just not running into good situations. And I think it comes down to, like, Freeman said so many times, we're going to be a team led by our offensive and defensive line. And it's like, I think we just believed it and are, like, trying to force it. And it's like, that's not what we are, guys. Right? Not what we are. You got, and the thing that killed me, we didn't touch on it yet. Or we didn't cover it. And I don't know if any questions came up about it. That I remember, but like what really freaking annoyed me, one of the many things that really freaking annoyed me, was how we just seemed to like wait to the second half to get Chris Tyree the ball. And it's like, hey, as soon as you gave him the ball, he did good things. Like, wow, what a concept. You get your really fast guy the ball in some space against a team like Marshall and good things happen. It's like, why was that not, you know, more of the game plan from the beginning? And this is going past the offensive line, but just in general, the struggles of running the ball. And it's like, it also feels like we're forcing Audric Estime into a role that he's not necessarily the best suited for, because we're like, well, this is the role that we want him to play. And it's like, well, okay. But it doesn't seem that they're using him to his greatest of strengths either. So I think it's a combination of all of that, but to me, it's more. I think it is more of a coaching and usage and utilization problem than it is anything else.
The Chris Tyree thing, because not only is he the fastest of all of them, or the most explosive, he's also the most experienced.
Yeah. We have 3 carries? What are you doing? And I saw Freeman's explanation today. I was like, well, he actually out-snapped. Like, I don't care about snaps. Like, I want – get the ball in his hands. Like, that's what you got to – like – and I don't know. Again, maybe he's getting the offense is not necessarily his domain. It's Tommy's domain,
right? So maybe
he's covering for him and taking us.
Like, yeah, it's not
exactly. He could be falling on the sword a little bit for him, so I'll give him that. But still,
well, it's not falling on the sword. It's his responsibility. He's that coach. He has to answer the question. You got the snaps. Like, okay, you know, whatever.
I don't think it's overrating.
He's not
going to
say I'm wondering the same thing. You know, like, yeah. He's not going to say that. No. The idea that he would in this game, after the first game, when it's like pretty clear we're not a good inside running team, it's pretty clear.
No.
To then not emphasize Chris Tyree in touching the ball, goes back to what I was saying. Like, it's hard for me to say like, oh, this is how Drew Pine can succeed, when I don't know how they're going to actually try to use him.
It's true. And they have to change what we do. If we come out against Cal and we see if the first play of the game is a shotgun run with Estime into like a stacked box, I'm going to be upset. I'm going to be upset, Greg, if that's the first play of the game. because that's not, they're just trying to force it. And it's like, stop forcing, like, stop trying to be the offense that you want to be and be the offense that you have the personnel to be today. It's like, it takes Reese multiple games every year to be like, well, this is what I wanted to be. We can't be it. So I guess we'll just be what we're good at. It's like, just do that earlier. Just do that earlier. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
The thing is, too, is like last year you were able to change on the fly because you had Jack Cohn as a fifth-year quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a fifth-year guy, you know, who started a whole season for Wisconsin, right? Like,
yeah.
Who is in the NFL now, or was. Maybe he's on a practice squad or whatever.
But yeah.
He was playing in the NFL. The point is that, like, Drew Pine is not going to be in the NFL.
Hey.
You know? So, like,
you don't know that.
Not. He is not.
You don't know that.
He will not. It doesn't mean he can't play well. It's just that he's not going to be in the NFL. All right. That's just true. All right. So
I believe in you, Drew.
Fine. You believe it. Like, I don't have believe become him. I just said he could do a good job.
I've become the president of the Drew Pine fan club somehow in the last 12 hours, and I don't know how this has happened.
Right. Okay. So the point I'm making is that you revamped you changed around the offense to something that you didn't practice really much in camp. And now you're asking these guys with a lot less experience to do the same thing. Right?
It's not
like ideal. we talked about this is how you can use Chris Tyree in the Kyren Williams role. Right? We've seen none of it.
Yeah. No.
Has there been a wide receiver screen this year? No, I'm sorry, a running back screen.
I don't think so, which is shocking.
There have been zero. I mean, and the question is about the offensive line, right? Well,
what do you do when the rush is getting there? What's a great way to slow down your pass rush?
Blake Fisher and Joel have gone backwards.
They have.
Why? I don't know. I couldn't say. I don't go to practice.
I don't either.
I just know that that's true.
You know who I think is still looking for an analyst job? I think Jeff Quinn is on the market.
You know what? I think the offensive line, you know what they need to do? They need to go to Jeff Quinn's house and get some extra practice.
Oh, man.
If you know, you know on that.
If you know, you know. We'll leave it at that. Next question from our buddy Oscar at Vamos Irish. Is winning hard? Is his first part. We know it's a multi-parter because it came from Oscar. Yeah, winning is hard. It's not easy. We're learning it this year. All the talk on offense, but did you expect more pressure from the D line? I mean, I think I talked about it already, but anything you have to add on the defensive line and
I think everybody expected more pressure from the D line. And I also think that people expected that there would be more block destruction up front. I mean, you know, Marshall ran into favorable numbers, favorable boxes most of the time. And look, that only works if you're winning one-on-one.
Yeah.
And they clearly were. So that's
You know what, though? That's the deal. We haven't mentioned him, but hats off to Howard Cross. Yeah, again, he 11 tackles from an interior lineman. And he's got the only sack against Ohio State.
An interior lineman who gets rotated out of the game, by the way.
It's a whole other.
My point is, my point is that he's not playing all the snaps.
I sighed because we're also getting a little rotation happy with that defensive line. Third part from Oscar. What's the best coping food? Examples include pint of ice cream, huge plate of loaded fries, milkshake, all of the tacos, etc.
The best coping food.
Yeah, honestly, I can tell.
Go ahead. I was gonna say it's for me it's like, and I didn't do this because I didn't think of it, whatever. It's like, give me burger and fries, man.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'd say for me it's probably like pizza. It's like after a loss, I just want pizza. Specifically, we have this one spot in town that we order from that's got this like really awesome, it's not deep dish. I think they call it like they're Sicilian, but it's like, I don't know. It's just awesome. It's like kind of in the middle of all of those. It's like their own thing. It's amazing. The only reason I didn't get it on Saturday was because I, again, had drilling going on in my mouth and I couldn't really chew. So I needed soft foods on Saturday, unfortunately. What did we get? Oh, we got pasta delivered because I was like, pasta is pretty soft. Oh, yeah. But that's what I would have loved, one of those gigantic pizzas. So good. Here we go. Speaking of Chris Tyree, we got a question here from IQ Way Too High. Says, shouldn't Tyree move to slot receiver? Says, Estime is obviously the best back, and Tyree won't be an NFL back with his size. Only a junior, he, Styles, Mayer, and Estime are all we have as weapons, so why not keep all of them on the field? Three different packages for three different backs. WTF is the full question. I don't think he needs to be pigeonholed into running back or receiver, like in just one role. Like, play him in the Deebo Samuel role. Like, I mean, it seems like they've been pitching that to recruits. So, like, Tyree seems like if there's somebody on your team that you're going to pitch that to, he probably would be it. Or not even pitch it to, but do it to. It's like, just get him the ball. I don't care where he gets the ball. I don't care if he gets it out of the backfield. I don't care if he gets it as a receiver. He's one of your best playmakers. Just get him the ball. Get him it to him, and ideally in space. Like, because, like, it doesn't make sense either to, like, say, well, let's give Tyree some inside runs right now. Because that doesn't make sense either, because the inside's not open. Just get him the ball. Let him get to the perimeter. Get him the ball on some screens. Get him to him, you know, as a receiver. And for all the snaps he's taking as receiver, has he been targeted once as a receiver when he lines up as a receiver?
As a receiver?
Yeah.
No.
No, right? And it's like, what that was Freeman's response today was like, well, he's getting a lot of snaps, you know, at receiver. It's like, well, is he getting, he's not getting any targets. So, like, obviously that's not working, or they're not looking to him. So just better utilize him.
Yeah.
All right. This one might be, again, this one's a little bit of a moot question at this point, because, you know, Buckner is now out for the season, but this question came before that news broke. But how would you grade Buckner's performance? This is from Evan. It says, in my opinion, it was a B-, which seems higher than most. He missed some throws, but wasn't helped by his wide receivers or play calling. Second and 10 runs, limited athletes in space. His legs were the only thing working. Here's what I'm going to do on my grading. I'm going to just say incomplete, because he got hurt. He's out for the year, and he was not put in the best situations. That's my grade.
B-, man. God bless that.
Yeah, that's
how I would go less than, because here's the thing about the receivers not helping him, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first pick to Lindsey runs a terrible route.
Yeah.
Okay. The second pick to Jaden Thomas, it's not that he ran a terrible route. It's just like he lost, and then he's not fighting for the ball hard enough.
Yeah.
You can't allow a pick six in that situation. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, you just can't. That's true, right? Receiver's not helping him out. He didn't help himself on the throw to Lindsey.
Nope.
He didn't help himself on the other throw to Thomas. He didn't help himself on the overthrow to Michael Mayer.
Oh yeah, that was that one was bad. I will say, there was no excuse on that one.
And the other part too.
Mayer's a big man. He missed him by a lot.
And the other part too is Lindsey and Thomas didn't help him. That's true. But you shouldn't be throwing that pass anyway.
Yeah.
That's a bad decision regardless. He tried to throw another pick six that got knocked down at the line of scrimmage. So, you know, to me, it's just like not, it was not a good performance from him. Just from a grade standpoint, it's like, it's one of those things like you don't want to, you don't want to grade him too low because he's so clearly trying his butt off.
Yeah.
You know, that he's scrapping for it, you know, even though he's making mistakes, you can tell he's scrapping for it. Right. So you don't want to grade him down because it's like, I can't hate on the kid. He's playing hard, but it's like, there are mistakes being made that shouldn't be made.
The shot of him ripping his helmet off and screaming after the pick six was like oddly comforting to me.
Yeah, like he knows he blew it. It's
in general, because it's like, I don't know how many times do you just see like a quarterback, again, not just for Notre Dame, but like I'll tell you who used to infuriate me with his reaction after interceptions was Donovan McNabb on my Eagles would like just throw shrug his shoulders like, oh, there's another one. And it would just infuriate me when he would not show like any sort of emotion after making a mistake like that. So like when he did that, I was like, to your point, it's like, all right, you messed up, but like you could feel how mad he was. And I was like, all right, I'll roll with that. Now, unfortunately we can't because he's hurt, but it was oddly comforting. We got a few more questions here, Greg. Some we covered, we're going to read them, even though we covered these in other answers. Clutch Sports Notre Dame asks us, does Njeli get any playing time this fall or will Pine take all the meaningful snaps? I wasn't impressed with what Pine did offensively against Marshall. However, he was put into a tough – or however, that was a tough spot for him to be thrust into. I think you already said you think Njeli will play, might play this weekend already. I agree. It wasn't the easiest of spots to be like, hey, we know we haven't really given you many reps, but get out there and lead us back from a double-digit deficit in 5 minutes. So we'll see what he does this week with a full week of practice, as the number one, and a game plan catered around him. So we got Nick at Mr. Grubby says, on the NBC broadcast during the Dropkick Murphys stadium intro, most players look nervous or just stood there on the sidelines. I thought this team doesn't look ready, and we really miss Kyren Williams' energy. He was their hype man. Does this team – I didn't see this part of the question. Who does this team miss more, Kyle Hamilton or Kyren?
I miss Kyle Hamilton more.
That it, we know that, obviously.
I don't know who the team misses
more. Did you get your Ravens jersey yet?
No, I didn't.
Why did you not get it?
I don't know, because I'm lazy and I procrastinate. What do you want?
I'm just saying, you just go to fanatics.com. Better yet, go to UHND.com, click on gear in the main navigation, and then go to Fanatics. That's the best way to get your Kyle Hamilton jersey.
There you go. See, I wanted you to do that. That's why I didn't get my Kyle Hamilton jersey yet.
Do you need me? I will log into our affiliate account from Fanatics, get a Kyle Hamilton affiliate link, and send it to you.
Sure. Sure.
So, for real, who do you think the team misses more? Kyle?
Here's the thing. What they miss is the accountability of those guys.
Yeah. You know, there's a third player you could put into that mix, too, that I think they are missing right now. And that's Kurt Heinisch.
Heinisch and MTA.
Yeah, but Heinisch specifically, man. Heinisch was
those guys are – it's the accountability.
Yeah.
Is Kyren – it was an accountable player. You know, he always was about it. I want the ball. He demanded the ball.
Yep.
He demanded it, you know, in a way that was like, okay, we got to give it to him, you know?
Yep.
Kyle was the guy who he always made he was always there. He was always making the play. He was always making the tackle. Right. And it's like, that's what you miss is that kind of, you know, spirit accountability from those guys. And, you know, less so on the defense, right? Like, I think the defense is they need more from the guys up front, but you know, on the main, they're doing okay. The offense is where it's really in a bad way right now.
Agreed.
So I guess on that front, it's probably Kyren.
Yeah. I agreed there. Nick also says, for fun, let's pretend Kyle gets around 5 snaps a game at boundary receiver.
Let's talk about it.
If he came back for his senior year, which he shouldn't have done, so we're not. But if he did, let's say hypothetical, Kyle came back for his senior season, and what was happening at receiver was happening at receiver, like right now, and he wasn't getting snaps. Like, would you fly to South Bend and track down Tommy Reese? Like, where would you be at in your?
I would pick it outside the stadium.
Pick it.
I do one of those sit-ins. Like, I'm gonna sleep in like a tree. Like, I would pick one of the trees around the stadium and I would like sleep in it until they put Kyle Hamilton on offense.
I love it. All right, we got like 5 or 6 questions. And we'll skip. We'll go through these quick because we're already at midnight on the East Coast here. Jack, could we touch on some of these? But here's a fun one here from Jack O'Sullivan. How many games does the 2021 Notre Dame team win if the Toledo running back takes a knee on the second yard line?
It's a great question. You know, because look, it affects things, right? It really does.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, here's there's so many things that went right for them, right? Like, do they beat Virginia if the quarterback doesn't get hurt?
Oh yeah, but that's
but it's that sort of thing.
I
right?
do like think if, we lose
if
at least
the running
one
back
game.
Doesn't do X. What's that?
I do think we lose at least. Well, obviously, so if the Toledo running back takes a knee at the second yard line or the 2 yard line, that's 2 losses in the season. Assuming again the Cincinnati loss, and I think they lose at least one more if that happens. Like, at least, I think at best you're 9-3 last year if you lose the Toledo game, at best. Yeah. When do we have to start? Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying he has a second part question, but do you have a...
Oh. No, you're good.
Right. When do you start to worry about losing recruits? When we touched on this already, I think it's like, I don't know, man. To me, with every mounting loss, I think you have to start worrying about losing recruits. With every mounting loss, that's not... to a ranked team, say it that way.
Yeah.
Interesting hypothetical here. Is it actually better for 2023 and 2024 that Notre Dame didn't pull out a comeback win in the last minute and has to come to grips with the loss? No, is my answer. Any thoughts, sir?
Let me think about this. Let me ruminate. Is it better for those teams
that we lost this game?
So this kind of goes to my earlier point of like there is a positive that can be taken from this, right? But there's a positive to, you know, winning the game as well, right? Like, so to me, like, better or worse, you have to make the best out of every situation, right? Every situation, there's an outcome and then there's a reaction, right? And so what is the reaction? If their reaction is to hunker down and say, you know what, our level stinks. Our level is crap. We need to level up. You know, this got to change, and it changes, and the program moves forward, and the program grows, and the program overcomes it.
Mm-hmm.
You could go into 2023 and say that, honestly, that Marshall game was the best game. That is the best thing that ever happened to us, because we had to learn something about ourselves, you know, and you use it as a catalyst, right? You could say the same thing with a win too. You know, it's just all in how you, respond. You got to respond no matter what it is. It's a life lesson. Good things, bad things. You know, you take it, what you take the outcome and you respond and you build off it and you go.
Hmm?
That's a life lesson. Doesn't matter what the outcome is. You just have to build, continue to build, right? And maybe the losing helps them build stronger. So
I like the rationale there. So we'll take it. And we'll move forward because we got three more questions. We're almost at an hour and a half. So the puzzle dipshit, and this is a username. I didn't make that name up.
Yeah.
Zach Davis_ND says, what's a reasonable expectation for what a functioning offense helmed by Pine could look like? If it's unreasonable to expect a functioning offense, then what's a good movie you've seen recently?
Well, you recently saw Top Gun. Congratulations.
Oh, I did. It was great. I still like the original better. I will say that.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, I mean, it got, again, no spoilers, but the ending, I was like, okay, that's a little, you guys had me for the first hour and a half, and then the last like 20 minutes, I was like, that's a little crazy, but okay.
It did get a little bit like, oh,
it's just a little, like a little,
oh boy,
but it was fun, I enjoyed it, yeah. I was like a little child watching it. I wish I saw it in the theaters, but just did not work out, so I watched it at home. And now I own it on Amazon because you can't rent it. And I was like, whatever. I was like, I've waited this long. It's $20 to buy it. I'm going to watch it a lot. I'm going to wait for the little guy to get old enough for where he can watch it. It's going to be great. So that's my movie to watch if we can't get a functioning offense. But anything to add on what a functioning offense with Pine could look like that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, it could look like what Marshall did.
Yeah.
Could look just
like it could look like what Notre Dame did with Ian Book in 2018. He's not as quite a good as a runner, but Book wasn't known as a runner.
He's not as close as a good passer either. Mm-hmm. Ian Book's a good football player, man.
Yeah, Drew Pine's not a bad football player.
Ian Book was a good football player.
As the newly minted president of the Drew Pine fan club, I tell you what, man, after this pod, if Drew Pine comes out and has himself a game on Saturday, I'm going to be insufferable. I'm just going to. I'm going to be like, I said it. And then that will be my new intro to the podcast when I introduce you as the president of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club. All right. We got Brian Jung says, are we overreacting in week two? They didn't get all the practices in and came off a huge emotional game. I think if things go bad this week, then we sound the alarm. I am upset over the loss. However, I'm in the minority here. I thought there would be a learning curve. Any thoughts?
Sure. I mean, yeah, right? Like, there could have been a learning curve, and you still beat Marshall. You know, I think
that's very true. But
I think we could learn while beating Marshall. I think
that's true. Look, but I will say, all coaches all coaches have bad losses like this a lot of times early in their tenure. Nick Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe in his first year at Alabama, and he came to Alabama with a national championship on his resume. And he was a head coach at Michigan State, at LSU, and for the Miami Dolphins before he was the head coach at Alabama. And I don't care what shape the Alabama program was in. You think Alabama did not have more talent than Louisiana Monroe in 2007?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that it happens. Yeah, hell, Jimbo Fisher. What's Jimbo paid? $9 million
a year? A
right.
Lot.
He's paid a lot. Got the best recruiting class money can buy. Sorry, that NIL could buy, apparently, according to reports. You know, that on the sidelines. And he lost to Appalachian State this same weekend. These games do happen. It sucks when you are on the receiving end of them. It really sucks when it's like the second game of your head coach's tenure, or third game technically of your head coach's tenure. And you're like, well, was this an anomaly or is this who we got? You just don't know. Cause it's so early. So, I'd like to think I am along the same lines as Brian right now of being like, yeah, this sucked, but I just don't know. I don't know if this is what I got all year and maybe next year in, you know, or was it the same, you know, they got in, they did, you know, Freeman said they got in late. It messed up the practice schedule they wanted to use.
They probably didn't take it as seriously after, you know, focusing on Ohio State. Hell, Lou Holtz lost games, maybe to Marshall, but Lou Holtz had some letdowns in his Notre Dame, in a Notre Dame tenure. So we'll see. If we come out, we win this weekend, I think it's going to ease a lot of concerns. It's going to make people feel a little bit better. We lose this weekend, and then, I don't know. Then I'll be asking ND Text, what are good retirement plans? And we'll go from there. All right, there's some other questions, but, guys, we're going to have to cut some of these this week. I am sorry. But the last one that I wanted to bring up is an interesting one, because, again, this is what we'll get. Let me ask a question first, and then I'll get into my thoughts on it. But we have Guy Tech Fury. At Paddington Lopez says, did Kelly leave us with a ticking time bomb? The offensive recruiting and development had apparently been Willingham level, with bad offensive line play the past two seasons, no quarterback development, and a lack of difference making skill players. What is your take on that?
Not a ticking time bomb, it does, I think, go to the point that I went to originally, in that these types of games have happened. Mm-hmm. You know, they have. We almost lost to Toledo last year.
Yeah, okay? We did.
That's true, right? We almost lost to Ball State. That we almost lost to Ball State in a year we went 12-0.
You know, that is like, these are all true things.
Right. So it's just like, it's not so much a ticking time bomb. It's that he left the program is obviously in a much better place than it was, when he inherited it. But then again, like, he inherited like Michael Floyd and Kyle Rudolph and Zach Martin and Tyler Eifert. You know, like, he inherited those guys.
That he did.
I don't know. Is that Harrison Smith better than Harrison Smith, Matt Diteo? You know, I don't know. He did inherit a lot. I mean, I don't know. It's now that I think about it, I mean, he got some pretty good players. Yeah. Capron Lewis Moore, Lewis Nix.
Yeah.
Those are good football players.
This has been like a thing, again, on Notre Dame Twitter for the last couple days, where it's like all of a sudden people are talking about like cupboards being bare and Kelly leaving the program in a bad spot. And let me be honest, or be perfectly clear, I have no love loss whatsoever for Brian Kelly. In the slightest, I don't like the way that he left the program, you know, kind of in the middle of the night at all. I hope he loses every game he ever coaches again. Like, don't like him at all. That said, it is totally revisionist history, I think, to try to say now, well, Kelly left the program in a bad spot and Freeman's got to rebuild. Like, yeah, some of the recruiting classes in the last 5 years were in the teens. Okay. That's not great, but it's not terrible. Were Marshall's recruiting classes in the teens the last few years? No, like they were not. They were whatever. They were in the whatever they were. I have no idea. No idea what their recruiting classes were because they were so low. And so to try to say now, after we all spent the entire off season just like parading around and celebrating the Freeman hire and all the good vibes, to try to say now that Kelly left things in a bad spot, I think is revisionist. It's just totally revisionist history that I just don't agree with. Kelly left this program with enough talent to beat Marshall.
For sure.
Just right. like he left it with enough talent to beat Toledo. Like, the Toledo game should have never been close last year. Notre Dame had way more talent than Toledo. That was a coaching failure. Just like Marshall, coaching failure. That doesn't mean that, again, things can't get better. It doesn't mean that I think Freeman is going to fail by any means. I think the fans who are already jumping off the Freeman bandwagon are ridiculous. And the, you know, again, you see the comments of like, well, at least the players like him. Like, oh, this is what you get. And it's like, just stop. It's two games. Let's see what happens, right? Well, if you, if we're 0-4 going into the bye week, then things, you know, change. But sorry, go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is like, okay, look at Marshall, right? Their starting quarterback, like, started games at Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. Right, like their starting running back was a former five-star number one player from Florida.
Yep.
Or Virginia. It was number one player from Virginia, you know, and obviously he had a tough career and all those things. My point is that Marshall is in the position that they are in because you're able to bring in transfer players to make it so you're competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings me to the fact that, like, Brian Kelly did leave them in a tough situation at wideout. You bring in one wide receiver.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that is just
true. Oh, yeah.
At the same time.
No, I totally agree.
At the same time, that was a known problem. This was a known problem in February or January when Kevin Austin decided to go pro.
Yep.
When that happened, every single pod said Notre Dame's bringing in at least one grad transfer, if not two at wide receiver. They brought in zero.
Yeah.
That is
not good.
Not just not good. It's kind of inexcusable. Can't do
it. It is. Yeah.
You can't do it. It just, how do you not bring in a couple wideouts, man? Like, you got to bring in someone. You got to bring in, you know, the guy from Purdue, you know, the Charlie Jones kid who goes 10 for whatever it was, 130 against freaking Penn State, you know, or it's like, you got to know, man, you got to know. Because now it's, you know, you lose Davis, Wilkins is hurt, Colsey's hurt. You're going three deep at wide receiver at this point. I don't know if that's a misevaluation. I don't know what it is, but
yeah,
you really needed to do it. And every other school is able to cover up holes with transfers. Look at Alabama, yep, man. They don't have good wideouts. They bring in transfers.
Yeah.
So
it's fair. It's a fair point. Yeah, I mean, we brought in transfers, just not at the positions. Notre Dame really needed them. But to me, still the overarching is that, yes, wide receiver was the one position you could point to. Other than that, people are going to point to quarterback and say, okay. But remember, Tyler Buchner was a top 100 recruit. He was a five-star at one point. Drew Pine was a top 250 recruit. So it's like, it's not like, again, they were, you know, that Brian Kelly left with, you know, the kind of roster that Tyrone Willingham left for Charlie Weiss. That's not, you know, not at all what happened here. So I think that's I'm not going to go there as much as I dislike Brian Kelly right now. And forever. All right. We've reached an hour and 40 minutes. We've covered most of the questions. I think we're going to have to put a bow on this one, though, because I am very tired. It's 12:30 in the morning, local time for me. And I do have work and all other things in the morning. So thank you, as always, for the questions, everybody. We didn't get any reviews this week to read, so we didn't read them. Leave us some reviews. We'll read them. We enjoy those. They make us feel good. So leave us some reviews. There will be a Cal preview of sorts at some point this week prior to the game. And with that, we bid you all adieu. And as always, go Irish.